Welcome to For What It's Worth, a podcast from Raymond James designed to help you plan, invest, and live smarter.
Hi, listeners, and thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Paige Lenson. We're glad to have you with us. You can hear this episode and more For What It's Worth on iTunes and Spotify. It's no surprise that major life events often have a direct impact on your finances. And getting married at any age certainly falls into that category. It comes with new considerations around the way you file your taxes, your Social Security strategy, contribution limits for certain accounts. And in fact, there's a lot to discuss for any couple considering combining their finances. Have you talked about your long-term goals, such as how and when you'd like to retire? What about the more immediate stuff, like creating a spending plan or deciding how to tackle any debt? There's a lot to think through, so here to share his insight on some of the many aspects of combining finances is Raymond James financial planning consultant Dan Kelly. Dan, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So if you have a couple that's starting to talk about combining their finances, what are some of the early conversations that they should be having? What are the first things to look at?
Well, I just want to start off. It's a difficult topic for anyone before marriage, in marriage. It's really avoided like the plague.
It makes us a little uncomfortable sometimes.
It basically is an infringement. You're asking me to tell you about my lifestyle and what I like to do. It's kind of invasive, and most people don't like talking. Probably 70% of the people, when money comes up, they're just going to try to change the topic or avoid it. So knowing that to begin with, and that it's a complex issue that a lot of people don't like talking about, if you know that going in, it gives you a sense of how important it is to a marriage or to a relationship. So if you can understand it, control some of those that anxiety, and nail down what's important to you as a couple and your goals, like saving for a house, a car, et cetera, or education, or, so it's really like the cornerstone of any relationship, because it's a large part of it is building trust. I understand this person. I feel comfortable. We're on the same page. So we have common concerns.
Definitely a transition to go from somebody, if you've been as an individual managing your own household, looking after your own spending, your own tendencies, and it is exactly like you said, you're opening up that trust level of someone else who maybe came from a different background and had, you know, a household where money was looked at differently.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, people grow up in different environments where the parents may be a saver, they may be a spender. And that has an impact on how they move forward in their life, whether they realize it or not. They pick up, and I'm not a psychologist or a lawyer, so I just want to mention that. But, there are patterns that you pick up and you develop, some good, not so good. But if you go through the complicated aspect of reviewing your budget, and I'm not going to use budget because when I use that counseling with people, they don't like it. So I'm going to change that and just use spending plan instead of a budget. It's easier
to make us a little less panicky.
Yeah, that's correct. But if you can, and a lot of religious organizations, if you're getting ready for marriage, they'll put you through premarital counseling. And a large part of that has to do with finances. So they understand the importance of it and how important it is to get control over it, understand it, and be sympathetic to the other person's situation. So it's extremely important to nail down the budget, that's for sure.
I imagine one of the early steps too is in part just taking an inventory of where I'm at as an individual and where my partner's at as an individual. Which one of us is maybe coming in with different debts, or what accounts do we already have? What are we, right, sort of the status before you look at even combining?
Well, you used the word partnership, so I'm going to follow off of that because it's a lot like a business. If you're going into a business with someone else, you want to make sure that partner is a viable partner and is understanding and has no skeletons in the closet. So getting a copy of your, and a lot of people don't like this, but getting a copy of your credit report, because that's a snapshot of who you are and where your debts are. And it's a good starting point. So
I was doing a little bit of research before we sat down, and Fidelity did a study last year in 2018, and they found that more than half of all the married couples they surveyed reported that they brought debt into the relationship. So it's not an uncommon thing. A lot of us are bringing in, whether it's student debt, maybe a mortgage, car loan, whatever it is, not uncommon to be bringing that into a partnership.
It's a huge issue, really. When you think about student loan debt, at millennials who carry a huge amount of debt coming in, it slows them up in their goals. As a family, it slows it up as a goal. So you have to, understanding that. And there's a general rule. It's the 50-30-20. 50% of your spending should be towards needs. 30% is towards leisure, dining out, and then 20% towards savings. And part of that savings, that 20%, is generally paying down the debt. And what's happened is that 20% is now expanded because a larger percent of millennials paying off student loans. It's an issue. It's a problem as that we all have to grapple with. But if you get the credit report, if you understand what the situation is going in, you're going to be more sympathetic and therefore willing to compromise more. So
when it comes to actually combining accounts, there are couples that probably approach it different ways. I'm sure some probably combine as much as possible. Some may choose to keep things very separate as much as possible. What are the most common approaches that you see couples taking?
Well, I think it's important to keep the individual accounts, but it's important to have, like for that 50% to cover the need, you want to have a joint account to cover that 50%. The other 20 and 30%, that's more individual. But for the 50%, the needs to cover that you have to cover every month, it's important to decide who's going to be taking what percentage of that. And there are different approaches. One in particular, I'll cover a couple of them, but there's one where you just split it down the middle. So it's 50-50. And that's an appropriate approach if your salaries are similar, or maybe, you know, $10,000 difference. If one party makes a lot of money, let's say they're making $100,000 and the other partner is only making $50,000, then two-thirds of the expenses would be covered by the higher wage earner and one-third by the other. So, and then if you're new starting out, you may not want to commingle any of your finances, and you take this bill, I'll take this bill, and you split it that way. And then as you get more comfortable, you start deciding how you're going to want to handle things. But it's very important to set up an emergency fund. So if one of the parties is unemployed, you want to have like 3 to 6 months in expenses saved in a savings account. And also for that joint account, you need to have some agreements. If one party spends, let's say, more than $500, that you have to check back with that other partner. So you build in some rules for how to move forward. So
sounds like whichever approach you take, whether it be one on a sort of very combined perspective, one on keeping more things separate, proportional, split down the middle, definitely a lot of conversation that has to be had. And I'm sure for those that have a financial advisor, probably talking to them too and seeing if they've got guidance for their particular unique situation.
Oh yeah, we get a lot of calls from advisors that in particular related to Social Security, and they want to know, if I get married, what do I have to do? You don't have to notify Social Security. They only care when you want to take the money out. So if you've been married for a year, you're eligible as a spouse for a spousal benefit. If you're divorced, if you've been married for 10 years, you're eligible for a spousal benefit and survivor benefit if the person passes away. So there are benefits that you can keep and obtain when you get married by way of Social Security.
This might be a simple question for you, Dan, but for our listeners who maybe aren't as familiar, what accounts have to stay in an individual's name versus what accounts could be considered to combine?
Well, the retirement accounts, individual accounts, the 401k, 403bs, those are your assets, and you can list beneficiaries if you die to have those assets. And so those you can't change. You can't make it a joint IRA individual retirement account. It's not possible. But if you were married before, you have the old spouse on there, you want to make sure you update that. Individual accounts, you can have a similar type of beneficiary designation. It's called a transfer on death for an individual or a joint account. So if you die, at least by way of contract, it's a substitute will that will go to that individual. So
a good chance to check in on all of those different beneficiary selections and
life
make sure
insurance,
that they're up to date with what you want right now.
That's correct, yeah.
Are there any tax considerations that couples should keep in mind, especially if they're looking at marrying? And this is something that was new to me. I didn't realize that in the year you get married, the IRS considers you married for that entire year, even if your wedding is at the very end.
That's right. December 31st, you're in. You're married. So you can file as married. But the tax rates have changed recently. And the individual rates, if you doubled it, it's equal to what they've set as the marital rate. So that's interesting. But yeah, there's some benefits of getting married towards the end of the year, being able to claim marital status, that's for sure.
Some things to check into are on different contribution limits or income limits. Some of them are different if you're, you know, an individual or someone who married filing jointly. Roth IRAs are an example of that, where maybe you individually don't meet the individual level at which you're no longer eligible to contribute, but mm-hmm. combined with your spouse's income, if you exceed that maximum, you might no longer be eligible to contribute. So definitely something to look into there, and probably to talk with your tax advisor about.
Or financial advisor. I mean, those are some of the questions we get in from financial advisors related to what are the limits. And it's the modified adjusted gross income that it's looked at. And that's the bottom of that first page of the 1040. And then you have to add back certain items. But that's to see if you're eligible to contribute. It's fairly easy. And you can just contact one of your financial advisors for that.
Are there considerations for those couples who are either about to purchase property, or perhaps one or both of them already own some real estate? Is this another opportunity to check how something is titled, maybe make sure that it's set up the way you want it to now that you've got a new partnership or a marriage in mind?
Right. Sometimes before you get married, there's some individuals that have assets in their own name, maybe sizable assets. And there are instances where a prenuptial agreement where you state this is a separate asset and I want to keep it separate. And this prenup is basically outlining that so that, God forbid, if you end up getting a divorce, that there's no haggling over this issue, that it's already been signed and agreed to. So it's important to look at your situation. And if it's, you know, second marriage, you want to make sure you protect your assets. So, for like a house, if it's your primary residence, you've lived there for 2 years, you as a single person can avoid up to $250,000 of a capital gain. If you get married, that doubles up to $500,000. An interesting point with situations where there's a divorce and there's a divorce decree and they say, okay, you get the house. And what happens is that's fine. You get the house, they change the title, but the mortgage is perhaps under two people's names. And if you're trying to take your name off of a mortgage, the mortgage company is not going to be too keen on that. So you may think, oh, I divided up, we're split. But all of a sudden you find out the mortgage company is coming to you because the other party didn't make a payment. So you need to make sure that you protect yourself in that regard. So.
A lot of this, it sounds like a common thread is that open line of communication, of looking at things early on, frequently. Another stat from that same Fidelity study that I mentioned, it said that those couples who make their financial decisions together, as opposed to letting just one partner or the other lead the way entirely, says that they're more likely to say that they communicate well overall, even on non-financial matters. So it sounds like it's just one piece of this kind of bigger communication puzzle.
It's a good example. Every day you have finances, you buy things, you purchase things, and it's important for both parties to be involved in it because it impacts your life in a huge way. So the more you talk together about money, the more you're going to stay together. So.
Dan, if the listeners of this episode take away one thing, whether it's for themselves or maybe it's a child or a friend or a sibling who's thinking about combining finances, what do you recommend that they take away?
A, it's very important to have a spending plan. Don't get too caught up in it and treat it like a drudgery, and because that can make conversations in the future difficult. So you want to build it on values and goals.
Make it a positive thing.
Make it a positive thing. Because if you bring it up and the hair is cringing your back every time, it's going to get worse and worse. And ultimately, you won't talk about it. And then the communication part fails. And that's one of the main reasons that relationships fail. So get a budget or spending plan and, practice, do it for 3 months. Nail down what that 50% needs are, and then have a joint account to help cover those needs, and use either the 50-50 percentage of income. Everyone takes a different approach, but that's how I would view it.
Raymond James financial planning consultant Dan Kelly. Dan, thank you so much for sitting down with me today.
Well, thank you.
Listeners, thanks for tuning in. You can find us on both iTunes and Spotify, so be sure to subscribe to catch all our latest episodes. For what it's worth, I'll see you next time.
All opinions and information, including any price references or market forecasts, correspond to the recording date listed in this episode's description. Any performance figures noted do not include fees or charges, which would reduce an investor's returns. The information contained in this podcast is not research, nor does it constitute the provision of any investment, financial, legal, accounting, or tax advice, or recommendations to the listener. Raymond James and its financial advisors do not provide tax or legal advice, and you should discuss any tax or legal matters with the appropriate professional. Past performance is not an indication of future results. There is no assurance any investment strategy will be successful. Investing involves risk, and investors may incur a profit or a loss. Investment products are not deposits, not FDIC NCUA insured, not insured by any government agency, not bank guaranteed, subject to risk and may lose value. Copyright 2019 Raymond James & Associates, Inc., member New York Stock Exchange, SIPC. Copyright 2019 Raymond James Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC.